G'day, I'm Rowan Barker, and this is The Silver Bullet. Today, we delve into the world of mental health, a journey that's often silent until it's too late. We've all heard the heart-wrenching, plaintive laments at funerals. I wish I knew. I didn't think it was that bad. Or, what more could I have done? These drive Shane Muller, the founder of SafeWatch, a business that imagines a community-powered approach to mental wellness. SafeWatch leverages an app to foster a village care model, emphasizing that mental health is a shared journey rather than an individual battle. It connects families, friends, mental health professionals, and employers, forming a unified front to bolster mental well-being. Shane Muller joins us to discuss how SafeWatch is changing the face of mental health support by encouraging collective care and support. Apologies for the audio quality from my end. Usually that's not a problem, but today was an exception. I'm sure you'll agree, though, when you listen to what Shane Muller has to say, that the content more than makes up for it.
Shane, welcome to The Silver Bullet.
Hi, everyone.
Shane, could you share with us your journey leading up to SafeWatch? What brought you to start it in the first place?
Starting SafeWatch, Rowan, I would say started back in 2019 when I was looking at some dire situations and also some statistics of people challenge with mental wellness and the path people start to go down with reference to mental wellness, and most importantly, the rate of change, the statistical rate of change of growth with people struggling for mental wellness. It was actually these things really that spurred me on to look at what we could do within technology to make a real shift and impact in this space, Rowan.
So 2019 is the date you mentioned there. 2020, the world went through or started to go through a number of years of something that we haven't lived through before that had a massive impact on people's mental health. So in some ways, your timing was great, but we're watching a sort of psychological experiment in real time with the impact of COVID, aren't we?
Absolutely. And little did I realize, I mean, I personally felt the statistics were quite daunting in 2019. Little did I realize that what was about to change would just really knock things out of the park, really, with reference to indicators and rates of change. Because you're right, COVID did make a huge shift. For the worse, unfortunately, or it certainly highlighted things that were there and brought things out. So you are right. We didn't expect that to happen. Although in 2020 was the year that the research really was done, and I took time out to really sit on this topic of why do this. And as I mentioned, that's when things shifted within. Yeah. Within everyone's world, really, which I must say certainly gave it more fuel to us to actually go ahead and do something. And also going one step further, that's when we also started to see the most maximized impact or evident impact of what isolation can do to people as well. It's something that hasn't been as evident prior to that on a large scale.
We're still recovering, aren't we? The full impacts of this may not be known for some time.
Absolutely. Still recovering. Some people are recovering. Some people are scarred. Some people on their guard, you know, losing certain things that we take for granted really shifted a lot within the fabric, I would say.
So, big question, but would you care to try to quantify the mental health challenge in Australia for us?
Well, there are statistics. There are a few statistics within Australia. Over 4 million people today currently struggle from a mental wellness condition. That's quite recent, these statistics. We also know that it is stated that in Australia, about 45% of the population will at some point in their life experience a mental wellness condition, which is quite staggering, because if it's that number, that you could essentially extrapolate that out and realize every single person in the country will be impacted. Because if there's someone that's a close work colleague or someone within a household that's challenged, the household is challenged. It's not something that stays just with that one person. There is another statistic from the Bureau of Statistics for 2022 around self-harm, and that the statistic says about 1.5 million Australians have admitted to having a self-harm plan.
Wow, they're staggering figures, aren't they?
They are, and when it comes to this, you know, our experience is most people wouldn't voice those things. So if that's the number, then it really is worse than that, as bad as that number is.
Those numbers, though, particularly the 45%, are going to at some point have a, you know, be mentally unwell or be struggling with mental wellness. Why is it that we can't destigmatize mental health, given how common it is?
Well, brilliant question is what I'll start by saying. I'll share a couple of observations. Firstly, going and seeing in a very private way a therapist doesn't have as huge a stigma as it does in some other nations. Mm-hmm. That's the first point. However, that works. But if you take that and put it into a couple of other scenarios, so take the workplace or take an institution. I'm just going to pick on politics as an example. There is no place that's easy for someone to fit in if they come out and say, this is what I'm struggling with right now. And I'm the minister of XYZ. There is the system, the fabric of politics, for example, does not have a place for that person to continue in that role. Going to the workplace, for someone to actually who was to come out and say, this is where I'm struggling. And by the way, it does take courage to do that, and it's great that people do that. But what we have found, what holds people back, is if someone is on track, you know, within the workplace, building their career, it is tough for them to get more pay, more responsibility, or promotion on the back of them coming out and making that claim.
Right. That's really statistically tough. Verified or anecdotal? Is that
anecdotal, not statistically? Yep. And the reason being, most people would not go and load someone up with more responsibility if they're undergoing, mental wellness challenges. Most people wouldn't do that. Most people wouldn't say, great, let me make you the general manager of the department now. It doesn't happen. That's number one. Number two, most people err towards giving space so that people can actually properly journey through and come out stronger, not load them further. So that is a challenge. There, furthermore, with the changes in the law where company directors are also held liable, because this now comes as a responsibility for company directors to be aware, you don't buy yourself out of this. You don't pay someone out of a challenge like this. I will go one step further as well, and that is, sometimes, and I use the example of workplace, sometimes organizations struggle with mental wellness challenges within the workplace. But what's interesting, and we're in the process of finalizing some data on this, often the mental wellness challenge shows up in the workplace, but the source is not necessarily from within the walls of the workplace. The source could be home or family. or finances, or something from the past, or whatever it may be. There's a string of things. It's not. It just often shows up within the workplace, and that is a challenging situation for those in the workplace, really.
Is it also the case that people who might be struggling with their mental health are unwilling to share that with a colleague because they don't want to burden them?
There's a genuine amount of people who don't want to burden people. However, I'll just use an analogy here, or actually a real story. Let's take something that's brilliant, we believe anyway, within Australia. And that's what's called Are You Okay Day. Mm-hmm. It's brilliant at starting or sparking the conversation. It's very unfortunate it's just one day a year. And it's very tough to get past that first question. Because within the Australian culture, at least, and many others as well, the reflex response is yes, fine, I'm okay.
Yeah.
That's just a reef, you know, you don't even think
it's
too
automatic.
Much, and that's how you answer. Exactly. Yeah. Now, to a buddy or a mate, one might still do that. It really takes someone to be in a position whereby the person asking the question and the person being asked the question are ready to slow down, because this is not a quick answer.
Yeah, you've really got to be open to listening, don't you? If you are actually going to ask the question, be prepared for an unexpected answer.
Very much. And, you know, most people aren't trained to handle that. You know, some people really would be like a deer standing in front of headlights. It really is tough for some people to then work out what the best response is. You know, there are statistics. Some people turn around and try to, you know, come up with all the answers, and that doesn't go down well. Some people try to prescribe, I'm using figurative language here, prescribe before hearing what the challenge is. So it is actually a challenging situation just to even start that conversation.
We do have challenges with mental health care in Australia. Is one of them that the system, such as it is disjointed?
I have found, Rowan, that disjointedness actually is not unique to Australia.
Right.
Many health systems, not all, many health systems around the world are quite siloed. It is unfortunate. You can go and see a psychologist. Maybe after a gap, you can go and see another psychologist, or you could be seeing a psychiatrist, whatever it may be. They don't all look at the same set of information. They're very siloed. And that's one of the things SafeWatch has been designed to do, and that's to break down those walls and have a single source of view on the individual, mm-hmm. as far as the individual is concerned, not the practitioner's lens.
So is it fair to say that the SafeWatch MO is just initially trying to at least get everybody singing from the same song sheet?
That is a fundamental byproduct, as at least from the health practitioner world. Mm-hmm. That's essentially a byproduct. The essence of SafeWatch, Rowan, would be it's based on what we call the village approach.
Right.
And that's based on research that kicked off, that was done in the UK originally, where it talked about, you know, people living in community, power of community, power of, you know, increasing speed of healing and recovery, staying buoyant, all that stuff. Now, that same concept is what we've founded SafeWatch on, and that is the concept of the village. Because the research validates that if people are able to live or have their village, and I'm using that as a figurative example, mm-hmm. with people who've got their back, that they choose, not someone barging into their village, but they choose, the most trusted people, they can start to build that circle of care, that, or another term would be that care community around them. So that as one continues and does life or lives life, through both the ups and the downs, because there will be ups and downs and seasonal changes, etc. Having that village around that person is actually critical for their care, number one. Number two, what we've done is with the app, you're actually able to, you go download the app, you register, and then you can start inviting people into your village by sharing a QR. You can, you know, invite 2, 3, 4 people in under 5 minutes and at least get started that easily. Now, it's only those people who one would trust and they know they have their back is who will get invited. There's no way to jump in to someone's village. And then you, in this case, if you're the user, you choose, Rowan, what you're going to share with whom.
So create your own village, as it were.
Essentially, create your own village. And let's just say there's, you know, a therapist, a school counselor, and a psychiatrist that this person's seeing. Well, they can choose to go, I'll share my meds with them, I'll share my mental health plan with them, etc. And literally have that all visible in the one place. That way, you know, if psychiatrist John changes medication brand or dosage, psychologist Michelle sees that.
Right.
And is not left in the dark going, what's shifted, you know, to make such a drastic change.
And how does SafeWatch, through the app, add to that initial village of care? Does SafeWatch offer additional services to people who might sign up and create their own village? Are you offering additional benefits or avenues to them?
Anyone's actually able to go and download the app, create activities of different kinds, be it emotional, physical, so different activities for what's dubbed self-care, and add those into a schedule, a reminder system, so people can actually go and do that, number one. Number two, there is simple learn capability where topics are covered. Again, it's not to make someone a specialist on it, but simple topical support. Number three, which is now we're leading back into this, the village aspect, a person can go and say, okay, I need to walk 20 minutes twice a week. I'm just picking that as an example, and that's going to be good for my mental health. Well, I can not only schedule to do that, I can invite a buddy being someone in my village, right, as an accountability partner, because statistics tell us if you've got an accountability partner, be it for studies, going to the gym, whatever it is, your chance of doing it is exceptionally high. And it could be made into something positive as opposed to a chore to tick off. So all we're doing here is leveraging the app and enabling someone to build habits, really, for them to stay buoyant. That's the first thing. The second thing is it also allows people to track how they're going and feeling on a daily or as often as they want basis. Now, in time, that then becomes a leading indicator or a key insight to the individual, so that the individual can actually see, this is actually how I have been going and this is how I am going. And that self-awareness is that a key step as they walk that journey to stay buoyant. Because if they can't see, it's like if you can't see where you're going, it's a tough road.
Yeah. Behavior change is hard, right? We need all the help we can get.
It's absolutely hard, Rowan. Yeah.
So you offer support tools for the friends and families of people who are using the app or who might be struggling, as well as the patients themselves?
We're actually going to be launching some very light capability and training, I'll use the term villagers, on how to be good villagers. Going back to the example I used about how you're okay day, you know, if people can be trained how to have conversation 2 and 3 after the first question and not make it so uptight, but, you know, have it natural, because by definition, people in the village would be naturally close. They're not inviting strangers. But we feel that with SafeWatch, we'll be able to provide guidance prompts through Ella. Ella is the AI personality within the app, on actually helping someone and nudging them on how to have the dialogue. That's the first thing. The second thing is the fact that they haven't connected with this person in their village for X amount of time, you know, potentially reach out or set an alert whereby, for example, you could set an alert whereby if your friend hits a 2 on a scale of 1 to 10, alert you.
Right.
And that insight with that alert, our objective is we want to nudge you, the human being, to do something. Because when someone starts to drop, they need a human being in their world to literally come around and their way.
Yeah, make sure they are okay.
Exactly. Exactly. Actually, the insights will be saying they're not.
Yeah, right. If they say they've self-described as a 2 out of 10, as you exactly. say, that could automatically prompt a nudge for somebody to intervene.
Absolutely. And by the way, it could be someone who's always hovering around an 8. Mm. So when they drop to a 5 or 6, that's actually bad for that person.
For them, yeah.
They, if you've seen a person who's always an 8, they're not happy when they're a 5 or a 6. It's a big drop. So being able to set these alerts is actually quite critical. The further point, I'll go one step further on, and that is we've also heard from some statistics we've looked at, it seems to be showing up either in men or adolescents to adults. And that is, I'll use the second example first, adolescents to adults, where through the app, we're hearing parents saying that, you know, with my adolescents using SafeWatch, for the first time ever, I actually know how they're going.
Wow.
Because talking about it, you know, e.g. a dad with a 14-year-old, for many, is not normal.
Yeah.
Or you just get these one-word answers. You're not really getting anything. But the app tells you exactly where they're going. And it's easy for them to go, this is where I'm at. That's a critical one. The men analogy is what I mentioned to you before. That's the same. It's very rare, or it's unfortunately rare, that many men don't come together to talk about how they're going.
Mm.
It's just rarely done. But with the tracking, at least the awareness is there.
Is that particular to Australia, that kind of culture, or is that quite prevalent among men in lots of parts of the world?
There is a particular reason for the Australian culture that we have seen that's somewhat unique to Australia. However, mm-hmm. you can go to, say, an Asian nation, they'd have the same thing, but it's for a different reason.
I know SafeWatch is relatively new, but have you seen any significant impacts from users and key benefits you could share with us?
I can share some insights. I will explain one element before I go into it, and that is from the foundation, Rowan, we built this with some disruptive capability around handling privacy, around the data aspect. Right now, when someone logs in and creates their registration and key to log in, there's no second key. They're the only person in, and they control their data, nobody else.
Mm-hmm.
If they called us for support, we're not able to get in because we cannot get in to someone else's information. We've actually created something with no technical administrative backdoor.
Right.
So
privacy is assured for all users?
Yes, by not having access, versus there are many organizations that claim privacy, but it's usually based on someone signing an NDA but there's always someone who has a technical login that can get into a system. That's just how the technology platforms are. We've built something here whereby administrators can't get in to a system other than the individual themselves. So that's a fundamental difference.
Great point of differentiation, yeah.
Absolutely. So we essentially say the closest analogy to this would be, what systems in place to prevent technical internal sabotage? Most places would struggle with that from a technology point. Because
sure.
there are administrators with access. So I just want to highlight that point to highlight that we actually don't know user private information. So right now, if the Prime Minister of New Zealand's using the app, we wouldn't know. So we have only some statistical data from app stores and things like that. With reference to feedback we've received it through practitioners who have shared quotes and feedback of their patients and people in their care world. Some of them have made claims similar to what I just said before. For the first time ever, I know how my 13-year-old daughter is going. I've never known that before. Another patient has shared that when they go and see their therapist, they hate the question, how's the last, you know, 2 weeks been going?
Yeah.
And they hate it. Well, at first they claim they don't remember, which is quite normal for most people. But they don't like it because they don't want to go back to that dark place. So yeah. It's something they intentionally don't want to talk about. Their feedback has been, this is great. I can go to the therapist. Therapist just looks up and sees exactly what happened. Last Thursday, I was a two. It was related to finances or whatever it is. And, yeah. and then the therapist has rich information in front of them. They don't have to really spin too many cycles with that yeah. opening question that could be, I mean, you could spend a while there trying to work out what's happened in the last 2-3 weeks.
You can hit the ground running in a counseling session like never before.
Absolutely, because you will actually be able to use be more precision focused with reference to seeing how the patient has been going outside the clinical yeah. setting.
Yeah. Fantastic. You mentioned Ella, I think it is, your AI mm-hmm. assistant. Mm-hmm. Have you got other AI elements in SafeWatch?
We're actually keeping all the AI elements quite light for now. Mm-hmm. So essentially focused on looking at the data. Ella in time will be able to look at some leading indicators. But what we're not doing is trying to claim to the marketplace that Ella can be a therapist. That's not the pathway we're going. There is a clear reason and need for people who are qualified like that. And we're not trying to be an AI therapist. That's not what it is. It's about providing insights and A, alerting and awareness, B, and C, helping someone, going back to the analogy I used before, helping someone be a better villager.
Yeah. Is there a role for technology and technological advancements in the future of mental health care?
I think there's a huge potential in the technical space, even if you just take one subcomponent and call it AI. There's many facets of technology. One of the challenges, unfortunately, when technology innovation spearheads at the speed that it's going and it is constantly increasing, what becomes evident is policy, the gap between technological advancement and policy widens. And then standards as well. So what happens if, based on something that was said, John Smith chose to go left and not right, that ended up in a catastrophic outcome? So that's an example of policy and standards not catching up to the technological capability. So we're very mindful of that, because unlike other topics to do with, it could be anything, productivity, finance, management, etc., this actually has to do with, by definition, people are already fragile.
Yeah,
it's not something that's light.
It's opening an ethical Pandora's box too, potentially.
Absolutely. And it's just going to, you know, it could be, it would be quite messy. And there have been quite a few cases of apps around the world that have actually suffered quite a lot as they embarked over the past few years, that we're seeing, you know, the legal implications. That's why our focus is the app is not the pill. The app is a platform to help people build their village so that the human element of care can be enhanced. It's trying to help people literally stay connected from a human aspect.
We've long said it takes a village to raise a child. Why have we not gone on with the what seems to be a logical extension that it takes a village to maintain people's well-being in adulthood as well?
That's a great question. Firstly, I think the saying is so powerful around the child that once children get to a particular age, and I don't know what that is, let's just pick something in the adolescent phase, their only goal in life is not to be called a child or seen as a child. Really. So I think part of that, unfortunately, has backfired because nothing to do with the child is what they're after. If they can be 1 year older, they probably would be. And again, that changes in time, naturally. But we strongly believe that a village is what people need to actually live life and be able to handle the extremes of ups and downs that come each person's way.
As they inevitably will.
Absolutely, yeah. And there's another thing that we have noticed. If you plot out in the last 10, 20 years, the rate of growth of people being connected, say through social media or telephony, whatever way, has been increasing at a staggering rate. It is almost the same as the rate of growth of people struggling from loneliness and or isolation.
It's one of the great ironies, isn't it?
Very much so.
What, is there a silver bullet to coin a phrase?
I don't know for silver bullet, Rowan, but I can tell you, based on our research, people being able to do life with others that have got their back, that can see their blind spots, that they can not just go through the ups of life, but also the downs, that actually allows someone to, I guess, be a fuller human being. Unlike, social media platforms that are used to display the highlights of one's life, in one sense, SafeWatch and the village approach, someone's actually able to share the lowlights of their life and actually have a space to be authentic.
I think that's a really interesting comparison. As you say, social media really only highlights the good bits. It's people living their best life and we don't see the other side of it. It's also said that you don't learn from your successes, you really only learn from your failures. So is there a connection there somewhere that
very much
we should be considering?
Very much so, but I will go one step further. It's not even if you study a lot of the social media, it's actually not people living their best life, because often that photo of the car is not theirs.
No,
it's a
pretending to live
it's
their
something
best life.
Way out that for many people it's actually not what they have, number one, and unfortunately number two, many who sometimes get them realize that that's only just one facet of it. So there is both, as I mentioned, the tension of the ups and downs in life, and people being able to handle the downs, or shall I say the valleys of life, really. That's where the growth happens. It doesn't happen on the mountaintops.
Great point. Shane, looking forward, what developments do you hope to see in the mental wellness sector to perhaps ensure a more comprehensive form of support in Australia?
That's
big
That's
question,
a week-long summit, sounds like. It really is. So firstly, with reference to the stigma, that is a genuine challenge. And for institutions to catch up and shift things, that actually is going to take a while. The good thing going for everyone is the younger generations, that doesn't faze them as much.
They're doing it better, aren't they?
Much better. So that is actually a very good aspect. The negative aspect to that, the younger generations, statistically, it just looks like it's easy for them to quit in life as well. And so, having someone by their side and battling through, it appears that a lot of people, and this is not limited to younger people, but too many people are battling alone. You know, you want to be a soldier, it'd be great if someone's got your back. If you're all out there alone, it's a tough battle. So what we're hoping is people would start to add more value to communities and doing life in communities. I'm using that as another key word here. And essentially start to go counter culture with reference to isolation.
Okay. And looking ahead for SafeWatch, what can we look forward to as far as your future plans and developments are concerned?
So we're, as I mentioned before, we've launched a practitioner version. We're looking forward to, in the next couple of quarters, to launch SafeWatch for the workplace. So it'll be tweaked to really deliver some amazing value for employees and employers. And again, just want to clarify, mental wellness challenges appear in human beings. It's not where they are. They could be in the workplace, they could be on the sports field, they could be at home. It's a challenge that the person would have. So the workplace edition is the next key thing we're looking at. We'll be launching a youth version. And then beyond that, we actually have a very strong pull to fast track and take this out internationally, because the problem, I'll just take our doorstep for example. I mentioned about 4+ million people in Australia suffer and struggle from mental wellness. In Asia, it's 450 million people.
Wow.
And there's cultural challenges that make it worse. So this is a significant challenge, not just at home, but within our doorstep, that really needs desperate addressing.
Shane, fabulous and fascinating to talk to you today. Thank you very much indeed for your time.
Thank you, Rowan.